This is Memorial Day weekend, and it's interesting. I know for those who have military in their family, they probably think about this weekend a little differently than other people sometimes do. A lot of people think of this as a weekend to go to the lake or go to the beach or go to a picnic or whatever. And those who have military and their family oftentimes are reminded of the sacrifices that have been made by those soldiers to give us the freedoms that we have. But it's interesting, isn't it, that different people view things very differently like that sometimes. Many people this weekend probably won't give a second thought to what Memorial Day is. To them, they just get a day off of work and they're just glad of that. And as we study together this morning about the meaning of life, it's interesting that people often give different answers to that question as well. We ask the question this morning, where can I find meaning for my life? And many people try to find it in various ways, in various places, in various things. And you get different depending on who you ask. What is the meaning of life? Is there a special meaning for my life that's not the same as the meaning for your life? What's my purpose? Why am I here? Well, the book of Ecclesiastes is the best book ever written on that topic. And in Ecclesiastes 1, verses 2 through 4 that was read to us just a little bit ago, there at the beginning, the writer who calls himself the preacher, the son of David, says some things about that as he begins by stating what to many people are some of those questions. He says, vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit has a man of all his labors which he takes under the sun? One generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. So again and again, it seems like, you know, people work all their lives, and for what good? Because then it just, you know, another generation arises and everything that they had done and everything that they had accomplished is forgotten. So many times, people view things that way, and they say, what's the point? What's the use? But those are some of the questions. What good is all the things that I've done in my life after I'm gone? What's going to be left behind? Is there anything that's going to... Am I going to make any impact? Is there any meaning to my life? What difference do I make? And those questions have plagued human beings for years, centuries, even millennia. So the question then that we still ask today is the same question that Solomon asked at the beginning of the book of Ecclesiastes. What use is it? What is my purpose in life? What can I accomplish? Will I make a difference? And unfortunately, as he begins to go through some of the various ways that he tried to find meaning to his life, he found some things that weren't very positive. Some things that didn't answer the question. And unfortunately, many today still try those same things. You've heard the saying, those who do not learn from the past are doomed to repeat it. We should learn from Solomon so that we don't go through the same folly that he went through in trying to find the meaning of life. You see, Solomon was in a unique position because of his position as king, because of the wealth that he had, the power and the position he had. He could try anything he wanted to try. He could do anything he wanted to do to try to find a purpose for his life, to try to find the meaning for his life. He could build huge stone monuments that would last for long periods of time. He could have hundreds of children who would come after him. He could buy or sell or get whatever he wanted to get. And so he, even more than we can today, he was able to try everything, to see and search all the world to try to find the answer to that question. What's the purpose? What good is life? What can I get out of it? What am I here for? All of these kinds of questions. And he was able to check out everything. You know, most of us can't afford to try some of the things that Solomon tried. But the good thing is, we don't need to. We can read about what he tried, and we can get our answer from him. Because if you do the same thing, you'll get the same result. Well, originally, as he starts out, when he says vanity of vanities, he basically says that everything is useless, everything is meaningless. There's no meaning in anything in this world. And a lot of people feel that exact same way. They feel like there's no meaning, there's no order, there's no law, there's no rules. It seems like just when things start going well, you get knocked down. And it seems like the people who do all the evil things are doing well, and the people who are trying to do right are struggling. And it just doesn't seem like there's any meaning in this world. And so he began to search and see if he could find some sort of meaning in this world. And he searched through everything that could be searched through. Now, I know he didn't have at his disposal some of the things that we have today. He didn't have television and automobiles and electricity and those things. But in the same way, he still had those same things. He may not have had television, but he had entertainment. He may not have had a car or 100 cars like some wealthy folks store them up and buy them up, but he had chariots and horses, which are the equivalent of that time. And so we can see, as he searches through these things, his unique circumstances that made it possible for him to search these things out and see how much meaning there was in these various things. And as we go through the book of Ecclesiastes, he finds that you can't find the meaning of life in most of the things that are available to us. And we'll look at some of those things that he searched for. First of all, you can't find the meaning of life in wisdom and knowledge. Now, that may seem odd, because it seems like that would be the very place that you would go to find the meaning of life. Isn't it a philosophical question? Don't you need some knowledge and some wisdom to figure out the meaning of life? Well, what we mean when we say that you can't find it in wisdom and knowledge is that you can't find it in worldly wisdom or worldly knowledge. And even godly wisdom, if not applied, isn't useful to you. Even knowledge of the Scriptures, if not understood and applied to life, are useless to you. A computer can be programmed with all of the words of the Bible, and it can be programmed to speak those words out. But that computer no more understands the concepts behind those words than a dog. Human beings have the unique ability to not only read these words, but to understand them and to get something out of them. But in all the world, all the wisdom, all the knowledge, and now, of course, at Solomon's time, they didn't have half the knowledge we've got now. Boy, we've amassed knowledge upon knowledge upon knowledge. We've got encyclopedias that are volumes and volumes long, and we've got computers that store gigabytes of information. The knowledge, oh wow, all the knowledge. But has it helped our world to find meaning in life? No, quite the opposite. Our world is struggling all the more. try to understand what the purpose of life is. They're reaching now into deeper and darker places, into things that are further and further from God's will, because they're still searching to try to find something that will make their life worthwhile, but they're searching in the wrong direction. You see, Solomon searched for meaning and wisdom. You know, in 1 Kings chapter 3, he didn't even have to work to have the knowledge and wisdom that he had. God gave it to him as a gift. God asked him, "What would you like?" And Solomon said, "I want wisdom so I can rule the people well." And so God gave him wisdom. And Solomon was the wisest man that ever lived. Now we take exception with Jesus, who was the God-man and of course knew the hearts and thoughts of individuals because of his supernatural ability. But as a regular human being, Solomon was the top. He was it. There was no one wiser than him. And yet, even with all of that God-given wisdom, he applied that wisdom to seeking out a lot of things that were ungodly. He used his wisdom in ways that it was not intended by God to be used. And because of that, he could not find the answer that he was looking for in wisdom or in knowledge. You see, even raw education, just learning book knowledge, doesn't deal with the need that we have for meaning in our life. Let's look at Ecclesiastes 1, 13 through 18. After he searched for it in wisdom, he says in verse 13, "I devoted myself, I gave my heart over to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under the heaven." He searched all the wisdom, all the knowledge that he could. And notice what he says in verse 17, "I gave my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly." Sometimes there's a thin line between being a genius and being insane. A lot of people cross that line. He said, "I gave my heart to know wisdom and madness and folly." And he says, "I perceive that this also is vexation of the spirit. For in much wisdom is much grief. And he that increases knowledge increases..." Now you think about that for a minute. How much happier were people 100 years ago or 200 years ago when they didn't know about all these diseases that we've got to worry about today? Knowledge just causes us more sorrow. When they didn't understand about cancer and heart disease and cholesterol and high blood pressure and diabetes, and they didn't know how bad, you know, none of them should have ever survived long enough for us to ever even been born. It was so bad back then. All these diseases should have killed them. All the bacteria and the viruses that were out there, they should have never lived. I guess in some cases, they say ignorance is bliss. Sometimes, at least, you know, and of course, even if they had known about them, they couldn't have done anything about it. So they were better off not knowing about it. They just lived their life. And they were probably in some ways a lot happier, a lot less stressed than we are. The more knowledge we gain, the more things we have to be stressed out about. The more things we have to worry about. And that's what Solomon said. He says, when you've got a lot of wisdom, you have a lot of grief. Now let me see if we can understand that. Who is it in the Bible that's referred to as a man of sorrows? Bowed down with grief? Jesus. Why was he a man of sorrows? Because with all of his wisdom, he knew that mankind was lost, and that even though he was going to make that sacrifice, most of them would reject it. Now think of the sorrow and the grief that would bring on someone. To know that despite everything that you know and everything that you're going to do, most people are still going to be lost. And as Christians, we have even though we have a joy, we also have a grief. Because while the world may think they're saved and think everybody they know is saved and going to heaven, we know better. We know when people die and they're not Christians, that they died lost. And that causes a grief to us that other people sometimes don't share because they don't understand that. Of course, at the same time, when a Christian dies and goes on to heaven, we don't have the same grief that others have who don't have a hope for heaven. But he searched for wisdom and knowledge and education, and he found out that's not where the answer is. It won't show me the meaning of life. It's just a vexation of the Spirit. And then we see that you can't find the meaning of life in wealth and possessions. Solomon searched for meaning in wealth. Oh, he was rich. Read about his house. He had a mansion. Now, oddly enough, if you read it, it wasn't really all that much bigger than most of the houses that most of us live in. But he had it fancy. It was covered with gold here and the finest wood paneling there. And it sounds like a lot of those fancy American houses. But he could have built whatever he wanted to build. And he built what, to that day and time, was the greatest mansion in his country. And probably in his part of the world because of his wealth. He was able to buy anything he wanted. We can read in 1 Kings 7 about that house that he built. We can read in 1 Kings 10 about some of the personal extravagance that he went to. When we think about, you know, all of the things that he had that the average person didn't. You see, we take it for granted that we can go to the grocery store and get some grapes or bananas or whatever. You know, back then, they couldn't have done that. But Solomon had whatever he wanted. He had monkeys and things brought from Africa. He had the timber brought from Lebanon. He had all of these things brought into him from all over the world. Spices and various other special treats that other people couldn't even imagine. He had whatever he wanted. He could buy whatever he wanted to buy. 1 Kings chapter 10 and verse 23 tells us that King Solomon exceeded all the kings of the earth in riches. All the kings of earth. He was rich. Did that give him meaning in life? No. His final answer to the results from seeking that path. In Ecclesiastes chapter 2, in verses 4 through 11, and also in chapter 5, verses 10 through 12, he tells us that that's not the answer. Verse 11, he says, Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on all the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. When we think about his house, his chariots of horses that he owned, his stables, the temple that he built for God, where is it now? Gone. None of it is still there. Oh, they've dug down and they found some things that they think are the remains of his stables and various things. But it's gone. It was a vanity. It was a waste. It was meaningless. Any wealth that goes beyond providing for the needs of life is just meaninglessness. It's doesn't add anything. Notice what he says in chapter 5. Verse 10, he says, he that loves silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loves abundance with increase. This is vanity. When goods increase, they are increased that eat them. And what good is there to the owners thereof, saving the beholding of them with their eyes? In other words, all the good that these material things do is just, they're pretty to look at. That's all the good it is. You can buy a $5,000 car, or you can buy a $95,000 car, and if they both run, the only difference is what they look like. They both get you where you're going. The only difference is to behold them with your eyes. Oh, that one's so much prettier. That's meaningless. What good does it do to have one that's prettier? Doesn't get you where you're going any better, and it just costs you more in taxes and upkeep and insurance. What's it accomplish? Then he goes on to say in verse number 12, the sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eats little or much, but the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. He said, you're better off to be poor and just have a little bit to eat and be able to sleep. And you ever notice that when you've worked, I mean physically worked hard all day, boy, you can sleep that night. And when you've sat around and haven't worked hard and you're not tired from labor, it's kind of hard to sleep sometimes at night. Makes a difference. And Solomon says the abundance of the rich won't let him sleep. Why? Because he's got so much to worry about. You know, the poor man who has nothing but the clothes on his back and he has... What's he got to worry about? Somebody stealing. There's nothing for him to steal. The rich man's got to worry about the bank being robbed. He's got to worry about what's going to happen with the stock market and all his money tied up in all the stocks and bonds and other states. He's got to worry that somebody might steal that fancy car that's out there in his garage, or that somebody might break into his house and steal all those fancy TVs and VCRs and DVD players. And he's got so much to worry about, he can't sleep at night. That's what Solomon said. He said he's going to sleep at night because of all his possessions and all of the cares that it brought. So no, wealth and possessions is not where the meaning of life is. Some people have searched there, and some people still search there today. They'll never find it. You can't find the meaning of life in worldly pleasures, whether it be physical, emotional, even some say spiritual pleasures. You can't find the meaning of life in those things. Solomon searched for meaning in worldly pleasures. You look at a man who had almost 1,000 women, and I don't know how else to put it, but he had 1,000 women at his disposal, if you use that terminology, because he could pick and choose which one he wanted, and he could tell one to go away if he wanted to, and they were just like possessions to him. They were disposable. He'd get another one if he wanted another one. He had so many, he probably didn't even know all their names. Maybe just had them numbered. Okay, you're number 476. I want to see you tonight. He didn't have all these wives and concubines that he would have. And then you look at all of the foods that he could eat. And you know, he could be a glutton on any of those foods, that pleasure that the different tastes of food would bring, and the wines and all of the other things to drink. And he had all of those things. And he could fulfill any physical pleasure he wanted, any emotional pleasure he wanted. He could fulfill it. You know, some people have different ideas about what would bring pleasure. To Sister Maddie, I think, just sitting in the cool shade tree of a fishing pond all day, and that'd be pleasure, especially if she'd get somebody else to clean all the fish for her. And fry them up and feed them. You know, and others, boy, just, you know, to be able to just play video games all day. And to others, to be able to go and watch movies. Or somebody else, it might be to get to ride on a rocket ship. That'd just be the greatest thing in the world to them. And to other people, it might be, you know, just to sit around and play games with their family. Everybody has a different idea about what's going to bring pleasure to them. What they're going to enjoy doing. Maybe going to a sporting event. Maybe riding in a certain type of car. They think about, well, this is what, well, if I could just do that, it would make my day, it would make my, it, that'd be, my life would just be perfect if I could do those things. But you know what we find? The same thing that Solomon found. When you do all of those things that bring all of the pleasure, then you just have to start looking for something else that will bring pleasure. Because after a while, no matter how much pleasure that thing brings, you get bored to it and you want something else. Even though it's hard about that. I want something else to get me through this. Because those people had the money and they had tried all those things and they had found pleasure after pleasure and they got to the point where they wanted something else. Another song was written, I want a new drug. One that makes me feel the way I feel when I'm with you. Well, the problem is that that same drug, they felt with that person after a while, they got where they didn't feel that way with that person anymore. They left that, whoever it was they were singing about and went on to 14 more people before the end of their career, with no doubt. But think about that, you know, new drug, because it's the same way with drugs. You take a drug, the first time, boy, it makes you feel good. And then after a while, it quits working. The same way with a pain reliever. You take a pain reliever and it takes the pain away. And then after months of taking it, then it doesn't work like it used to work. Honestly, that's the way the human body is. There is no earthly pleasure that can last. Worldly pleasures are not where it is. You know, no one ever parted like Solomon did. He had the money to do it. You imagine, he had a party going on constantly, no doubt. He lived the fast life. And what did he do? Was he happier? No, he said it was not. Ecclesiastes 2, 1 and through 3, he tells us how much he gave himself over. He says in verse 3, I sought in my heart to give myself unto wine, yet strained my heart with wisdom, and to let him hold on folly, so I might see what was good for the sons of men which they should do under the heaven the days, all the days of their life. He said, I'll prove with mirth and enjoy pleasure, and behold, this also is vanity, he said in verse 1. See, he tried it, and he found out that it just doesn't work. The worldly pleasures. Ecclesiastes 1:8-11. He says, the eyes are not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with the hearing. There's no new thing under the sun. Remember how much you keep trying to find that new thing, but no. Everything is always the same. And these people who give themselves over to pleasure, they eventually go further and further and further and deeper, trying to find that pleasure. And they eventually get to the point where they destroy themselves. They fall into despair. There's no new thing to keep us from. You try it all. But then, you can't find the meaning of life in power and thinking to. Problems and stuff like that. He had the power. He was taxing people. Had people that would bow down to him when he came by. Had people do everything for him. If he said jump, they jumped. If he said come, they came. If he said go, they went. They didn't question it because they knew if they did, they'd be dead. Think about this kind of power. One of his brothers, who didn't get to be king, asked only a very small thing. He said, you remember there was David blessed wife, I guess you could call her, when he was old and couldn't stay warm, they got a girl to go in and keep him warm, kind of like an electric blanket or a hot water bottle, I guess, would be what we would use today. But they got a girl to go in and lay in the bed to keep him warm. This brother said, he said, I don't want to be king, but he said, if I could just have her to be my wife, I would love her and I would want to be with her and she could be my wife after David had died. He sent Solomon's mother to ask that. And boy, you know, Solomon, with his power, he said, what? I can't believe he's asking that. Next year I want the whole kingdom. He's going to die. And he died. That brother died just for asking. But Solomon had 900 wives. 900 of them. He asked for one wife to have. Oh, Solomon searched through the power and fame. He didn't need anything. Now, some people think that if I could just be famous, if everybody knew my name, then I'd be happy. But no, Solomon had the highest amount of power that a person can have. He had 1,400 chariots. He had 40,000 stalls for the horses and 12,000 horsemen. He rented a navy. They just went out and paid for a navy. He had the power. He didn't have anybody to fight because everybody wanted to be his friend. There was a time when the United States was in that position. Everybody wanted to be our friend. They didn't want to fight us. Now it seems like everybody wants to fight us. Because he had that much power. We talked about King Sheba coming to visit him because of his offenses. He got there, he said, God, couldn't you better let him believe what he's coming about? He's never been here. He didn't have any half of it. There's so much faith in himself to have to all these things that you've done. But still, he wasn't satisfied. He couldn't stop his happiness in that power of the thing. And he said to the angel, people who have power save more power. People who are famous become more famous. Or they're afraid that somebody else would replace them. They struggle and they fight to try to cling on that popularity for just a little bit longer. And then, the small brother can't find the meaning of life through creative reach. And he saw the church for that too. A lot of people say, you know, I'm going to express myself. If I could just, you know, paint the perfect masterpiece, write the perfect novel, I could just do those things. Then that stuff would be a thing. And if that piece of art work would live on after me, that book would be there still. And the years would come on. And I'd be happy with that. Well, according to 1 Kings chapter 4 and verse 33, Solomon wrote 3,000 proverbs, and 1,005 psalms. We don't have most of those. In the book of Proverbs, we have psalms. We have maybe 600 to 800, maybe 900 of those 3,000 proverbs he wrote. In the book of Psalms, we have maybe a handful of the Psalms that he wrote. Did it make him happy? Did it fulfill his life? No, he says in Ecclesiastes 12:12, my son, the admonished by thee, of making of many books there is no end. And much study is wearisome to the flesh. It's just basically all it does to study those books and write those books so that you get into it and all those messy patterns. And those
people within the village there. Think if you do it yourself, is it really as fantastic that you can think of that some man has written? It was fantastic to me. Oh, some like gave me number of things. Some like the work. Well, some of the works are really great things. Or Shakespeare was just really great things. And so whatever the greatest that might be thought of would be, you could ask and most people have never read it. They never heard of it. They never know about it, but they never read it. And probably never knew it. The difference we say was the Bible is the greatest book ever written. You know the part of it is. You know it? Most people have never read it. Although there's not no accusation about it, but most people have never read it. The whole thing. And yet Solomon had written all of these things. He didn't give any answers. He just kept telling. Ecclesiastes 2. He said, therefore I hated life. We think there's a reason that the world is full of people who are depressed and suicidal. Because they're seeking for pleasure, seeking for meaning in all the wrong places. Seeking for happiness and joy in the wrong places. For satisfaction. And when we do that, we get to that point, then we just make fun. Stop those living people. He says, my favorite, all my favorite, which I speak at the stone. Therefore, I went about to put up my heart to the sustainer. He even got started. Tired of everything that he taught. Wait for the meaning of life to just be depressed all the time. And he didn't forget that. But I went about to make my heart to the sustainer. But he said, which one still is that one? But finally, finally, at the end of the book, we come to the answer, and it was right there all along if he had just known where to look. And he should have with all that wisdom God gave him. But he found that the answer was quite simple. Chapter 12 and verses 13 and 14, he says that there's only one way to find meaning for your life. The only way our lives have any meaning is if we're following God's commandments. He said, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. After he had tried everything there was to try, he said, let's hear the conclusion. This is it. This is what the answer is. I found it. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment, every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. All those things that we can try in this life. But the fact of the matter is that we get one chance through this life to figure out that what we need to be doing is following God's commandments. We get one chance. There is no second chance. This is the test. There won't be any redos. Won't be any makeup tests. This is it. And we've got to figure it out. The good news is Solomon figured it out for us and he wrote it down and he told us. So if we can just do what he said to do, fear God and keep his commandment. That's the whole duty of man. That's why we're here. That is the meaning for our life. That is the purpose. Somebody wrote a book entitled The Purpose-Driven Life, in which they claim that you've got to find your purpose in life. Well, Solomon already found our purpose in life and told us what it was. Somebody wrote a whole book about it. Solomon sums it up in two verses. Fear God and keep his commandments, because everything that you do is going to be brought forward in judgment. You know, we live in a world where if at first you don't succeed, try again. You don't pass the driver's test, you can retake it as many times as you want to until you get it
Right, and then you get your driver's license. If you fail the grade in school, you can retake it.
If you fail this lesson, you can get stuck back to the student, write it off as part of the driven. You're there for the driven. Stop again. But what?
After this life is booked, the lesson teeth are fixed, it's not a given.
This is it.
This is the directory for school.
This is the supper of the life.
This is the supper of performance. And it is this performance on which we'll be judged. In Hollywood, they put up those movies on the screen, and they go, wow. It's amazing what good actors those people were. Until they come out with the DVDs and then they started adding on them all of the mistakes that those people made and how it took them 25 takes to get that one line that was 6 words long right. So many tries. They kept trying and trying until they got it right. Well, you know, they can do that, but still, because they can edit it and get the one they want. But on the stage, in front of a live audience, if you make a mistake, there's no director there to say, come on, let's go back and take that one from the top. And that's the way it is with our lives. There's nobody to look, when we look at mistakes, and say, okay, well, let's back up and try that again. We've made that mistake. So we can be forgiven for it, and we can move on from it, but the mistakes were made. It doesn't disappear. We can search for meaning to our lives wherever we want to search for it, but we'll only ever find it in one place, and that's in doing the will of God. It's just a matter of whether we're willing to do that or not. Whether we really want our life to be satisfying and fulfilling, or whether we just want to keep on searching. If you're here this morning, you're not a Christian. Some of God's commands include those that tell us how to become a Christian, how to be saved initially from a lost condition. John 10, verses 27 and 28, Jesus says, my sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. I give my life, I give unto them eternal life, and they shall never perish. Either shall any man pluck them out of my hand. We've got to hear Jesus. We've got to listen to him. But then listening is not enough. We must believe. John 3 and verse 36, Jesus says, he that believeth on the Son has everlasting life. He that believeth not the Son shall not see life, but the wrath of God abides on him. We've got to believe. Acts 2:38, Peter said, repent and be baptized, every one of you, in the name of Jesus Christ for the remission of sins. If we want to receive the remission of sins, we must repent. We must also confess, Acts 8 and verse 37, Philip asked the Ethiopian eunuch, and he said, if you believe with all your heart, you must keeping it from being baptized. And the eunuch answered, I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. And then of course, we must be baptized. Acts 22 and verse 16, Philip asked the fulfillment somewhere else in life. You need to repent of that, come back to God and follow His commandments. So here we have a new church, John. We ask that you do so as we stand and as we sing.